DW Africa Link.
Imagine that you wake up in the sweltering heat of the Malawian sun. The day has barely begun, and yet the weight of survival is already on your shoulders. In your home, there is no sound of rushing water from the taps because there's never any water. Days, weeks, even months pass in some districts without a single drop flowing from the pipes. Today, we delve into the heart of this crisis. Why has it persisted? What's being done? And most importantly, how do the people of Malawi survive when the pipes run dry? Stay tuned.
DW Africa Link.
My name is Josie Mahachi. Welcome to Africa Link, the podcast that connects you to the stories that matter from Africa.
Africa is changing. Don't get left behind. Tune in to Africa Link.
For millions in Malawi, this is a harsh reality. Despite being blessed with abundant water resources, the country faces a crisis that leaves households struggling for basic needs like drinking, cooking, and hygiene. In Chisi District, over 250 households have gone without water from pipes or boreholes, and the situation worsens during the rainy season when women face violence in maize fields while searching for water. Girls often drop out of school or miss classes due to hygiene challenges, underscoring the difficulty of achieving Malawi's Sustainable Development Goal, SDG, on water and sanitation. Shockingly, UNICEF reports that 7 million Malawians lack access to clean water and 80% rely on unsafe sources. To unpack this pressing issue, I'm joined by DW correspondent George Mango in Malawi and Chandira Chisi, Head of Policy at WaterAid Malawi. Thank you so much, gentlemen, for joining us here today on DW Africa Link podcast, where today we are speaking about the Malawi water crisis. Over 250 households have not tasted water from pipes or a borehole in the Chisi district, situated in Malawi's central region and a stronghold of the president, Lazarus Chakwera. I'll start with you, George. You're our correspondent on ground. What is the extent of the water crisis in the district, and how are households coping without access to clean water?
In terms of the challenge or the extent of how people are affected by the unavailability of water in the district, it's very challenging. Why? Because we're talking about a district which is very mountainous, and people do depend on water from rain, more especially at this time of the rainy season. They also depend on water from maybe some other natural water sources. So it's challenging, and because it's not hugely populated, people walk long distances. By walking long distances, we're talking about moving from point A to Z, which can take them about maybe 30 to 40 minutes for them to get a bucket of water. And that water has to be used in their homes for cooking, bathing, washing clothes. So it's a challenge, more especially to do with girls, adolescent girls. It's a big challenge.
Right, right. Now, Mr. Chisi, you are an expert in this. What are the underlying factors that have led to the lack of water access in this district?
It's not the whole district per se, but some geographical areas within the district, depending on topography, have got their challenges. I think George has rightly put it that the nature of Chisi, the topography, really makes it really quite hard. So the underlying factors are basically limited investment in the communities in terms of infrastructure for wash. investment for new infrastructure, but also continued utilization of the existing infrastructure. So they end up really becoming unusable or becoming unfunctional. According to the SDGs, when a person takes longer than 30 minutes really to access water, it's as good as they don't have access to water. More so, if they're accessing that water from unsafe sources, then there is a problem. So in that sense, really, that remains a challenge.
Okay, you mentioned the issue of investment, lack of investment, because who would want to come and invest in such an area? But we have a government, and it is their responsibility to ensure that this problem finds a solution. So can you just tell us more on that as a head of policy, WaterAid Malawi, Chandira?
Yeah, at the government level, financing really remains a challenge. At the moment, from the research done by UNICEF, it indicates that Malawi needs about annual investment of $251 million annually for the next couple of years if we are going to attain the 2030 targets of universal access to wash for everyone. But at the moment, we are putting in quite less, just about less than $150 million, which is way below. So the gap is still there. The gap is big. The challenges, obviously, they're financing. Most of the times, the huge investments financing is usually procured from outside the country through loans or grants. At the moment, domestic financing is not... We're not yet there that we can finance using domestic resources. So with limited access to international financing, then obviously that becomes a problem for a country as a whole. And let me also say that for rural areas, largely government depends on partnerships with non-government organizations to help in mobilization of resources. Most of the resources that government procures usually therefore they are usually invested in through water boats for urban areas and semi-urban areas. So there is a gap in that sense.
Right. Now, George is our correspondent on ground. He touched a little bit on how this has become a major challenge, especially on girls. You, Chandiwira, you are the head of policy, WaterAid Malawi, and aid is needed in this district, whatever part of the district. But as you've been obviously visiting this district and seeing what is happening, can you elaborate on how the lack of hygiene and water access affects girls' even ability to stay in school?
There are two sides to the story. The first one is that the girl child and women, they spend most of their productive time walking long distances trying to fetch water, because there is a generalized approach to roles here. Fetching water is usually the responsibility of girls and women. So the girl child gets affected in that sense, in the sense that probably she may not be able to attend school as regularly as she would want to because of the conflicting demands on her at the household level. Secondly, as you rightly observe, there is the issue of menstrual hygiene. In the absence of adequate water supply, then the whole question of how a girl child can sustain herself in school comes into play. Many times because, one, the water, even at the school level, is not probably as available as it should. And secondly, because maybe the change rooms are not there, many times the girls around that time when they're experiencing periods, they would rather stay at home. So that's how this whole issue plays out in the life of the girl child.
Right. And George, when you were pitching this story, I'm sure you have done your research as well. Just tell us also, besides the girls, how is this water shortage in this district affecting the daily lives of residents?
the way it is affecting the residents of Nshisi, more especially the areas that I did visit, Chiko, we're talking about Chiko, which is close to a district known as Salima Deza. The challenge is very, very huge. Why? Because men are now forced to escort their wives to fetching water. So you can imagine in that situation. And now we're just about in the rainy season. It means with the bushes around, because most of these precious water are sourced from mountains, you know, natural water, that is. Men have to escort their wives. Girls have to be escorted by their brothers. And then walking downhill, climbing uphill, it's a big task. Health-wise, it's a challenge. They get home very tired. So you can imagine spending more of this time as a family, as a couple, escorting each other to search water or to fetch water into their buckets. And most of them, when I encounter this situation, they'll just pick maybe a 20-liter bucket, you see? So how many trips per day to make sure that the households or the family has water for cooking, bathing, washing clothes, and then a girl child or boys go to school. Just imagine, just a bucket, 20 liter for 20 minutes or 30 minutes. It's a big challenge in this district. And the other fascinating thing that I also encountered, more especially in Nshisi, which is of course not only in Nshisi, but across the country, we're talking about 4 million people in Malawi as lacking access to improved water sources. So it's a big challenge. It's really a big challenge. A sustainable development goal number 6 is also an uphill task for the authorities of for the Malawi government to accomplish if it comes to 2030.
Right. Now, Chandivira, you hear George has mentioned and touched on a lot of stuff there, even including some other districts that were not initially mentioned in this discussion. What have you got to say about that?
Yeah, it is very true. We do have the statistics that clearly indicate that using the standards of sustainable development goals, we do have quite a couple of millions, in excess of 4 or 5 million, that do not have, would be considered as not having access to water or safe water, as it were. So it is true. But I think it also has to be appreciated that the fact that we know that there is a problem as a sector and we're jointly working together, we are cognizant of the severity of the problem, and the issue of financing is something that everyone within the wash sector is very much aware of. He's mentioned the issue of setting up of the ministry. We really think that is a positive move in the right direction, because then it helps to put water sanitation and hygiene at the center of policy prioritization. But the question is, are we there yet? I think we're not yet there. Are we moving there? We are moving there, but maybe not fast enough. We still need to do more to put water, sanitation and hygiene at the center of prioritization. And that will only be appreciated when we see significant resources moving towards that area. We need to look at the multiplier effects of positively investing in WASH. You would find that these do play out on the other areas which are usually considered as important. For example, health, agriculture, nutrition, education, and all that. So I think as we begin to look at things that way, we will see the reason. For us, we're basically lobbying that probably when you look at things using that lens, then definitely we would see the need for the agency of investing decisively in this area, because the benefits are going to have a multiplier effect across the development paradigm.
Right. You mentioned that are you there yet? Not yet. Are you on your way? You are going there, but it is very slow. Why is it so slow? What exactly is the problem? Now we're not talking of this district alone. We're not talking of Malawi as a general. and what are the broader health and social consequences of this water crisis for the country?
I think globally, because we're living in a global village, we need to be looking at prioritization to begin with by the countries themselves. In this particular case, Malawi, are we flagging WASH as a priority? If the answer is yes, we need to be looking at development partners, their plans, strategies, and then the international finance institutions. Are they prioritizing WASH? So you'd find that the right policy moves have to be made at different levels, starting from international finance institutions, and again, the development partners, as well as Malawi government. For Malawi government, I think in terms of policy, they've managed to prioritize WASH. When you look at the commitment in the SDG, you look at the Malawi 2063, again, WASH is prioritized. But now matching the prioritization with action, the resourcing, that's now the difficult part. It's to do with our situation, probably, the resource constraints that we have. The question is, how do you move money from point A to point B without affecting point A? But in terms of the foregone costs, or rather the consequences of not investing in WASH adequately, are quite dire. For example, we're looking at issues of cholera outbreaks. Malawi has been grappling with cholera outbreaks for the last 3-4 years, like we've never had before. Again, you'd find that it's an issue of limited investment in WASH. And again, if you look at the disease burden, you find that 50% of the disease burden is basically waterborne. It's to do with WASH, basically. So if we resolve WASH, we improve water sanitation and hygiene, we'll be doing away with the cost of medication, which is very expensive, by the way. And we've done a research as WaterAid, and we believe that $1 investment in water sanitation and hygiene has a return on investment of $4 across the economy. So I think we just have to move in that direction. We have to ramp up resources for the sector.
All right. So, George, Chandiwira just touched on some solutions that are needed, treat the water, finding solutions. In your opinion, do you think government is doing enough, or has there been any intervention from the Malawian government, non-governmental organizations, or even community leaders to address this water crisis?
In terms of dealing with the water crisis, I should begin by saying that in terms of development partners, non-government organizations like WaterAid, World Vision, UNICEF, they're doing a tremendous work. One, lobbying, advocacy issues, asking government to ensure that the budgetary allocation towards water and sanitation gets improved year in, year out, so that at least, you know, people are able to have access to clean water, and then they also have, you know, facilities befitting each and every community, so that people are able to, you know, have water. Making sure also that boreholes are drilled in rural areas. And at the same time, we're also looking at this as a political issue that we're heading towards the 2025 general elections. The same organizations are now talking about making it a political debate, because each and every presidential candidate is to ensure or speak about how is he or she going to work on these water challenges that the country is facing. Suffice to say that the current government has also ensured that there is also the establishment of the Natural Water Resources Authority, which has to look at how water is, you know, provided by water boards in the country. At the same time, there is also the Salima Lilongwe Water Project to ensure that the capital city Lilongwe has enough water and other surrounding districts. So those are some of the interventions that the current government and development partners or organizations like WaterAid are currently doing. But the bottom line is are we going to achieve the sustainable goal 6 when it comes to 2030?
Mm-hmm. It's at a snail's pace, Chandirira. Let's be practical here and not just throw words around, right? You have been in this industry to do with water for years. I'm so sure of that. Then what practical and sustainable measures can be taken to ensure long-term water access in this district, or rather in the country?
I think there are a number of things that have to be looked at. Water is a resource. It's a natural resource. So we also have to be looking at the resource management part of things, because if we don't manage the water as a resource, eventually that water may not be available for abstraction, even when we do have the money. So that's one bit that I think as a country we need to focus on. And the good thing is that we do have an authority that has been put in place, National Water Resource Authority, which is basically working towards protecting the water as a resource for sustainable use. Secondly, is that nevertheless, we have to increasingly be investing money into abstraction and access, not just for water, but also sanitation and hygiene to all the people. I don't think there are two ways about that. And thirdly, probably, is to look at the balancing up between a provision of water to urban areas as well as rural areas. Malawi is largely a rural-based country where 85% or 80-85% of the people are rural-based. But then the most of the investments that come in, usually they target the urbanites through big water systems that are managed by water utility companies. We need to find a way of how we can bring more investment into the rural communities, exploring the best technologies that could ensure sustainable access and sustainable use of the facilities.
DW correspondent George Mango and Chandiwira Chisi, head of policy at WaterAid Malawi, many thanks for joining us. At the Africa Link podcast, we always look across the continent to see how the stories and issues we are dealing with play out or at times even overlap. Our climate is changing at an alarming rate, and it's making it even harder for the world's poorest people to get clean water. According to WaterAid Nigeria, more than 60 million people in Nigeria do not have access to basic clean water supply. With the current climate scenario, it is predicted that water scarcity will displace between 24 million and 700 million people by 2030. So how are Nigerians coping? Here is what some have to say.
Water scarcity in a suburb of Abuja is a crisis situation. It's better imagined. The worst case scenario is where you have to depend on water vendors. So it's so challenging, and in some cases, some go hours or days without taking bath, and they may end up using pure water sachet supply to augment when the scarcity is hitting most.
The water scarcity has been immensely intense. It's really difficult for us to get water. Most times we have to buy water, or we have to go a long distance to get water. We don't have water to cook, we do not have water to wash our clothes. It's really serious.
In most of the villages, local governments, they relied on boreholes and wells for their daily usage of water and other things. And those villages that have dams, streams, you understand, most of them to feed their cows and other things, they use dams and other things. But mainly the source of water supply is wells and these motorized boreholes, mostly.
No water board and no borehole. So you have to go and buy pure water for far place. Cooking take a lot of time. If you want to cook, I can take like 4 hours or 3 hours. Just go and find water first. They say there's no light. You have to wait the village before you buy water. For start from so 150, 200 naira. You buy a jerrycan, you get price. sometimes 250, sometimes 200, sometimes 150.
We dug boreholes for ourselves where we are getting water. If we are to wait for the estate to supply us water, we'll end up not having water for maybe close to a month before it will get to our turn. So we had to make boreholes for ourselves where we supply ourselves water. That's how we manage.
Those are some Nigerians expressing their no water experiences. That's it for this edition of Africa Link. Remember, you are not just a listener, but a key part of our community. And your engagement can significantly influence the direction of our discussions. We value your insights and encourage you to share your thoughts with us. Remember to click follow so you can catch all of the Africa Link podcast episodes. This podcast was co-produced and edited by Isaac Kelechi. My name is Josie Mahachi. Thanks for listening. Until next time. It's bye for now.
DW, made for minds.